You're listening to the Restless Wanderer podcast by Paul Coulter, and this is part 5 of a series in the book of Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 5, verse 14. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "If anyone commits a breach of faith and sins unintentionally in any of the holy things of the Lord, he shall bring to the Lord as his compensation a ram without blemish out of the flock, valued in silver shekels according to the shekel of the sanctuary, for a guilt offering. He shall also make restitution for what he has done amiss in the holy thing, and shall add a fifth to it and give it to the priest. And the priest shall make atonement for him with the ram of the guilt offering, and he shall be forgiven. If anyone sins doing any of the things but that by the Lord's commandments ought not to be done, though he did not know it, then realizes his guilt, he shall bear his iniquity. He shall bring to the priest a ram without blemish out of the flock, or its equivalent, for a guilt offering, and the priest shall make atonement for him for the mistake that he has made unintentionally, and he shall be forgiven. It is a guilt offering. He has indeed incurred guilt before the Lord." Leviticus chapter 6, verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "If anyone sins and commits a breach of faith against the Lord by deceiving his neighbor in a matter of deposit or security, or through robbery, or if he has oppressed his neighbor, or has found something lost and lied about it, swearing falsely, in any of all the things that the people do and sin thereby, if he has sinned and has realized his guilt and will restore what he took by robbery, or what he got by oppression, or the deposit that was committed to him, or the lost things that he has found, or anything about which he has sworn falsely, he shall restore it in full, and shall add a fifth to it, and give it to him to whom it belongs on the day he realizes his guilt, and he shall bring to the priest as his compensation to the Lord a ram without blemish out of the flock, or its equivalent, for a guilt offering. And the priest shall make atonement for him before the Lord, and he shall be forgiven for any of the things that one may do and thereby become guilty." Now we'll pause there in verse 7 of chapter 6. This is the fifth and final of the five sacrifices that we read about in these chapters of Leviticus. In chapter 1, we saw the burnt offering. The whole animal is brought and burnt before God. We saw that it was a substitution, taking the place of the person who laid their hands on that person, and a transference in some sense of sin and of guilt. And so the whole animal is offered, and that speaks to us of the offering of Christ in our place, of offering his whole life, but also of our sacrifice of lives lived out for God. Then we saw the grain offering, which is an expression of thankfulness for our work and the fruitfulness of it, and offering that to God. And thirdly, we saw the peace offering, an offering of gratitude for peaceful relationship, harmony with God, and an expression of harmony with one another. Both of the burnt offering and the peace offering, both animal offerings, and therefore they include this idea of atonement for sin. The grain offering is not about atonement for sin. It's not an animal offering. There's no blood involved. And it is about an offering of our work to God. So those three offerings are voluntary. They're given whenever a person wants to express gratitude to God, when they become aware of gratitude for that. The sin offering that we saw in chapter 3 or chapter 4 and the beginning of chapter 5 was an offering whenever a person or people became aware of sin, and it was an offering brought to God to atone for that sin. But specifically sins that maybe didn't have an implication for other people, but simply were sins against God, breaches of God's commandments. But this fifth offering, the guilt offering, relates to the sin offering, but it has a particular dimension that somebody else has been harmed through the sin. In the last episode, we talked about the guilt, the sin offering rather, and asked the question, when it talks about unintentional, does that mean that there is no forgiveness when somebody knows that they are sinning? And I think what we've read about the guilt offering helps us to see that it doesn't mean strictly only when the person doesn't think they have sinned, because some of the things that are described here under the guilt offering are clearly things that the person must have been aware of. that they have caused harm to other people. Chapter 6 describes some of the sins that are covered by the guilt offering: a breach of faith, deceiving his neighbour, or through robbery, or oppressing his neighbour. These are not things that can be done accidentally. You don't rob somebody accidentally. And so we're not talking, in, when we talk about unintentional sins, about things where the person really didn't know that they were sinning. But we are talking about people who have not willfully rejected God. They haven't gone as far as that, but they become aware of sin and they want restitution. And the instructions for the guilt offering are really important in terms of understanding the nature of sin, because it holds together this fact that the person has sinned against another person, and so they must make restitution for what they have done. If it's a sin in a holy thing before God, then restitution is made to the priest, bringing what was owed and adding a fifth to it. If it's a sin that has harmed another person, then that has to be atoned to the person who has been harmed. That has to be paid back to them. And a fifth should be added. So there is restoration to the person who has been harmed. It should be done on the day when he realizes his guilt. That's true of the sin offering as well. You don't put this off. A person who really realizes they're sinful doesn't kind of hold back and say, but I'll deal with God later. They do it there and then. They go and do it right away. That's an imperative, because God knows how prone we are to procrastinate and to forget and to, over time, make excuses for ourselves and lessen the seriousness of our sin. But there is this holding together of the fact that there is restoration to the person, or restitution to the person who has been harmed, but there is also an atonement before God. So it's not enough when somebody realizes they've sinned against another person just to put it right with them. They must do that, but they must also bring compensation. Chapter 6, verse 6 says, to the Lord, a ram without blemish, or its equivalent. So again, an animal that is the best and is pure, a substitute, a recognition that this sin, yes, may seem to be primarily against another person, but it is an offence to God. And before him I need forgiveness, and to him I must make compensation and restitution. And this is the nature of sin, isn't it? It challenges us to think about our own lives. Do I get this wrong in either direction? When I realize that I've sinned against somebody else, do I just feel bad because I feel shame before them and don't realize that I'm also guilty before God? When you realize that you've done wrong to somebody else, yes, you need to put that right with them. You need to apologize to them. You need to pay them back if there's a cost that they have incurred because of your wrong actions. That's vitally important. But you must also come in humility before God. You have to come and confess it to him and receive his forgiveness. We're very good at lessening the significance of the wrongs that we do, aren't we? You know, thinking of them simply as, well, it wasn't quite the best that we could have done. It wasn't ideal. But Leviticus leads us to a fuller understanding of sin as an offense against God. But on the other hand, we might be tempted to think that when we have confessed our sin to God, then we are forgiven. And of course, that's true. But that forgiveness is also contingent on restoring the relationship with others. It's not like we can say, well, God has forgiven me, so I don't need your forgiveness. Or God has forgiven me, so, you know, I don't really need to go and confess my sin to that other person and admit to it because I'm forgiven anyway. And it would be too hard, and they might not accept me, and they might, you know, they might kind of hold a grudge against me. Well, it doesn't matter about any of those things. You have a duty and a responsibility to go and to confess your sin. Restoration of the relationship with the person is not always possible. They must forgive you in order for you to be restored. They may not trust you, and why should they if you've breached trust with them? But you still have a responsibility to go and confess that sin and to make whatever restitution you can. Even in the Lord's Prayer, so familiar to us, it says that we can seek God's forgiveness in as much as we forgive those who sin against us. So there is a vertical dimension, yes, but there's also a horizontal dimension. We are forgiven by God, but we ought to seek restitution and restoration of relationship with one another, certainly within the community of faith, the community of God's people, Israel in the time of Leviticus, the church for us. The guilt offering tells us that. So five offerings: the burnt offering, seeking atonement and expressing gratitude for forgiveness by the whole animal being burnt as a substitute. The grain offering, offering the fruit of our work to God in gratitude for the ability to be fruitful and for the provision of food. The peace offering, expressing our gratitude and our joy at being at peace with God and including that in relationship with others. The sin offering, when we have sinned against God and we seek forgiveness from him. And the guilt offering, seeking to restore relationship with God in specific sins and infringements and restitution with others. Five sacrifices that together encompass Israel's relationship with God. Five sacrifices that for us find their fulfillment in the person of Jesus, but that also challenge us to live out the spiritual significance of those things in giving gratitude to God, offering our whole lives to him, living in fellowship with his people, seeing work as part of our worship, dealing with sin immediately by confessing it to God and by seeking restitution with others whenever that is necessary. Great lessons for us. But let's read on, because there are a few more things that are said about sacrifices, which really revisit or add some detail to these five sacrifices. So let's come back to Leviticus chapter 6 and verse 8. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Command Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the law of the burnt offering. The burnt offering shall be on the hearth, on the altar, all night until the morning. And the fire of the altar shall be kept burning on it. And the priest shall put on his linen garment and put his linen undergarment on his body. And he shall take up the ashes to which the fire has reduced the burnt offering on the altar and put them beside the altar. Then he shall take off his garments and put on other garments and carry the ashes outside the camp to a clean place. The fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. It shall not go out. The priest shall burn wood on it every morning, and he shall arrange the burnt offering on it and shall burn on it the fat of the peace offerings. Fire shall be kept burning on the altar continually. It shall not go out. And this is the law of the grain offering. The sons of Aaron shall offer it before the Lord in front of the altar, and one shall take from it a handful of the fine flour of the grain offering and its oil, and all the frankincense that is on the grain offering, and burn this as its memorial portion on the altar, a pleasing aroma to the Lord. And the rest of it Aaron and his sons shall eat. It shall be eaten unleavened in a holy place. In the court of the tent of meeting they shall eat it. It shall not be baked with leaven. I have given it as their portion of my food offerings. It is a thing most holy, like the sin offering and the guilt offering. Every male among the generation or the children of Aaron may eat of it, as decreed forever throughout your generations from the Lord's food offerings. Whatever touches them shall become holy." The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "This is the offering that Aaron and his sons shall offer to the Lord on the day when he is anointed. A tenth of an ephah of fine flour is a regular grain offering, half of it in the morning and half in the evening. It shall be made with oil on a griddle. You shall bring it well mixed in baked pieces like a grain offering, and offer it for a pleasing aroma to the Lord. The priest from among Aaron's sons, who is anointed to succeed him, shall offer it to the Lord as decreed forever. The whole of it shall be burned. Every grain offering of a priest shall be wholly burned. It shall not be eaten." The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the law of the sin offering. In the place where the burnt offering is killed, shall the sin offering be killed before the Lord. It is most holy. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. In a holy place it shall be eaten, in the court of the tent of meeting. Whatever touches its flesh shall be holy, and when any of its blood is splashed on a garment, you shall wash that on which it was splashed in a holy place. And the earthenware vessel in which it is boiled shall be broken. But if it is boiled in a bronze vessel, that shall be scoured and rinsed in water. Every male amongst the priests may eat of it, it is most holy. But no sin offering shall be eaten from which any blood is brought into the tent of meeting to make atonement in the holy place. It shall be burned up with fire. Chapter 7, verse 1. This is the law of the guilt offering. It is most holy. In the place where they kill the burnt offering, they shall kill the guilt offering, and its blood shall be thrown against the sides of the altar, and all its fat shall be offered, the fat tail, the fat that covers the entrails, the two kidneys with the fat that is on them at the loins, and the long lobe of the liver that he shall remove with the kidneys. The priest shall burn them on the altar as a food offering to the Lord. It is a guilt offering. Every male among the priests may eat of it. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. The guilt offering is just like the sin offering. There is one law for them. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it, and the priest who offers any man's burnt offering shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering that he has offered, and every grain offering baked in the oven, and all that is prepared on a pan or a griddle, shall belong to the priest who offers it. And every grain offering mixed with oil or dry shall be shared equally among all the sons of Aaron. And this is the law of the sacrifice of peace offerings that one may offer to the Lord. If he offers it for a thanksgiving, then he shall offer with the thanksgiving sacrifice unleavened loaves mixed with oil, unleavened wafers smeared with oil, and loaves of fine flour well mixed with oil. With the sacrifice of his peace offerings for thanksgiving, he shall bring his offering with loaves of leavened bread, and from it he shall offer one loaf for each from each offering as a gift to the Lord. It shall belong to the priest who throws the blood of the peace offerings, and the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offerings for thanksgiving shall be eaten on the day of his offering. He shall not leave any of it until the morning. But if the sacrifice of his offering is a vow offering or a freewill offering, it shall be eaten on the day that he offers his sacrifice. And on the next day, what remains of it shall be eaten. But what remains of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day shall be burned up with fire. If any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering is eaten on the third day, he who offers it shall not be accepted, neither shall it be credited to him. It is tainted. And he who eats of it shall bear his iniquity. Flesh that touches any unclean thing shall not be eaten. It shall be burned up with fire. All who are clean may eat flesh, but the person who eats of the flesh of the sacrifice of the Lord's peace offerings, while an uncleanness is on him, that person shall be cut off from his people. And if anyone touches an unclean thing, whether human uncleanness or an unclean beast or any unclean detestable creature, and then eats some flesh from the sacrifices of the Lord's peace offerings, that person shall be cut off from his people. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the people of Israel, saying, You shall eat no fat of ox or sheep or goat. The fat of an animal that dies of itself and the fat of one that is torn by beasts may be put to any other use, but on no account shall you eat it. For every person who eats of the fat of an animal, of which a food offering may be made to the Lord, shall be cut off from his people. Moreover, you shall eat no blood whatever, whether of fowl or of animal, in any of your dwelling places. Whoever eats any blood, that person shall be cut off from his people. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the people of Israel, saying, Whoever offers the sacrifice of his peace offerings to the Lord shall bring his offering to the Lord from the sacrifice of his peace offerings. His own hands shall bring the Lord's food offerings. He shall bring the fat with the breast, that the breast may be waved as a wave offering before the Lord. The priest shall burn the fat on the altar, but the breast shall be for Aaron and his sons. And the right thigh you shall give to the priest as a contribution from the sacrifice of your peace offerings. Whoever among the sons of Aaron offers the blood of the peace offerings and the fat shall have the right thigh for a portion. For the breast that is waved and the thigh that is contributed, I have taken from the people of Israel, out of the sacrifices of their peace offerings, and have given them to Aaron the priest and to his sons, as a perpetual due from the people of Israel. This is the portion of Aaron and of his sons from the Lord's food offering, from the day they were presented to serve as priests of the Lord. The Lord commanded this to be given them by the people of Israel from the day that he anointed them. It is a perpetual due throughout their generations. This is the law of the burnt offering, of the grain offering, of the sin offering, of the guilt offering, of the ordination offering, and of the peace offering, which the Lord commanded Moses on Mount Sinai on the day that he commanded the people of Israel to bring their offerings to the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai. Now, this brings us to the end of the portion of Leviticus that tells us about these five offerings, or a sixth one is included here, the ordination offering. So you might have noticed as we read that last section that there is a sacrifice to be brought by the priest on the day when he is ordained. And that's part of God's provision. And these sacrifices, we're told in verse 38, the Lord gave these commands to Moses on Mount Sinai on the day when he commanded the people of Israel. So this is still part of the law given at Sinai before the people of God moved on from Sinai. Very much a following on from Exodus, where the Ten Commandments and other laws were given. So what are we to say about these instructions? Well, in many ways, these chapter 7 and the second part of chapter 6 from verse 8 onwards is really adding some detail and in some cases restating things that have already been said about each of these sacrifices. But the focus is very much on the priests and on their responsibility. Which parts are they allowed to eat? How should they bring the sacrifice? What should they do with the blood? What should they do with the vessels that are used, and keeping the sacrifices pure from unclean things? And in that context, we hear this phrase, cut off, being used. There are people who must be cut off if they ignore the regulations, if they eat the meal, even though they are unclean. Verses 20, 21, and 27 in chapter 7 tell us that. And the word has an origin in agriculture. It would have been the word that was used when a bush or a tree was cut down. Now, what does that mean? What did it mean for them to be cut off? Well, it might have meant execution. It might have meant killing. Certainly there are cases where God steps in and cuts people off by killing them as a direct act of judgment. But probably more often it meant being put out of the community of God's people, being separated out from the camp of Israel and put out from their midst. So it's a serious judgment. It's telling us that these instructions are really important. There is a way for God's people to worship him. Within that, God supplies for the needs of the priests. Within that, there is a pleasing aroma for God. Within that, there is an intentional separation of what is holy from what is unholy. Within that, there is a perpetual and unending fire. You notice the fire is not allowed to be put out. Verse 9 and verse 13 of chapter 6 tell us that. A reminder of the continual presence of God. A reminder that there is no part of life and no moment of life that is not under his supervision and is not accountable to him. A constant devotion, a constant burning, a constant offering of sacrifices to God. Daily need for forgiveness. And the constant presence of God amongst them too. So I think what these instructions really add to the previous commands about the sacrifices is this sense of the all of life, all embracing aspect, the way of worshiping God that is constant, always aware of his presence, always bringing sacrifice, always having him at the center of their life together as a nation, the provision for those who serve them as priests. We might relate that to the need to provide for those who are shepherds of the church, although I'm hesitant to do that. Some commentators do that. And certainly there's a principle there that those who work in teaching the word should be provided for. They shouldn't be muzzled, to use Paul's language when he writes to Timothy in 1 Timothy about that. They are worthy of being supplied, but again, they're not priests in a special holy class in the way they were in Israel. But also the need to keep their fellowship pure, to be a disciplined, discipled group of people who keep unclean things separate from holy things, who take seriously their worship of God. And that applies, I think, to discipline in the church today, this idea of being cut off. There are times and when someone is guilty of sin and is unrepentant that people should be put out of the fellowship of the church, always with the hope of restoration. It doesn't imply that they are being judged as no longer saved. That's between them and God. But if they are not repenting of sin, then the church should take its purity as the people of God seriously and should put them out of the church. The New Testament teaches that clearly. So we've come to the end of the first section of Leviticus, looking at the sacrifices. We've seen how this is embracing of all of life. We've seen how the most important principle in worship is that it is pleasing to God. We've seen how forgiveness of sins and atonement is on the basis of sacrifice as a substitution of the bearing of sin. We've seen how there are voluntary sacrifices that express gratitude for forgiveness for sins, that express fellowship with God and with his people, that express the whole life nature of worship as we bring the fruit of our work to God. We've seen too that there are sin offerings and guilt offerings, the need for sin to be dealt with before God and before others, for restoration of relationship with God and with others when we've sinned against them. I hope this inspires you in your appreciation of Jesus, the sacrifice, the one sacrifice who encompasses all of these meanings of sacrifice. But I hope it also inspires you to want to live faithfully for him, to worship him in a way that is pleasing to him, to live all of your life with awareness of his constant presence, and to be part of the fellowship of God's people as a community of people who live together under his rule in gratitude for his salvation.